There is a new enemy for some Israelis, romance between Jewish women and Arab men, and vigilantes have banded together to fight it. The vigilante groups are walking the streets in towns across Israel. The largest and most notorious is in the Jewish settlements that have sprung up in and around traditionally Arab East Jerusalem. Shira Frankel joined one of the groups on patrol.
The small white hatchback swings into a nearly deserted parking lot and does a quick loop around. It's just after 10 at night, and the lot is clearly a prime destination for a teenage date night in the settlement of Pisgat Ze'ev. But David, a 31-year-old who lives here, is out for a different kind of prowl.
Go down to that parking center. Stop. 1 minute. That's them over there. Check if there is a Jewish girl in that car over there.
Every night, David, who asks not to be called by his real name, patrols this and other neighboring Jewish settlements. His mission is to find Arab Jewish couples and break up their dates.
My heart hurts every time I see a Jewish girl with an Arab. It's extremely upsetting. I ask myself, how did we get to this situation? How did we descend to this level? It is a serious step backwards in our eyes.
David is the leader of a group of vigilantes that goes by several names, including Fire for Judaism and Love of Youth. They say they number between 30 and 40 men and patrol the streets each night. Officially, they are on the lookout for any mixed couples. But TS, a member of the group who often serves as David's driver, says the problem lies solely with Arab men dating Jewish girls.
These men approach the girl in a nice way. They buy her things, they build trust with the woman, so that given some time, the girls just blindly follow them. And with time, one friend follows another, and soon enough you have a commune made up of these kinds of girls.
Comparable groups have formed across the country. In Petah Tikva, an industrial city in Israel's center, the municipality has formed a special division to address what it sees as the problem of underage Arab-Jewish couples. But in Pisgat Ze'ev, the couplings are an unforeseen byproduct of the growing number of Jewish settlements that have been built across largely Arab East Jerusalem. The small stretch of benches outside Pisgat Ze'ev's only mall seems to be ground zero for teenagers here, no matter what religion. Alona Levy, a 16-year-old Jewish teenager, says that she gets approached by Arab men every day.
We were walking on our own to the mall, and a group of Arab boys drove by and were yelling at us, "Hey, hot girls," and we didn't pay them any attention. We aren't interested in them. This happens to us almost 3 times a day, at least.
But she and her friends understand why some girls decide to defy local norms and date Arab men.
There are a lot of girls that go out with Arab men because Arab boys are wild, they're bad boys. Some girls like that. I think they like us because Arab girls are all conservative and wear the covering on their hair, and we dress normally.
David says the mixed dating is a growing epidemic, one that his group hopes to stop by handing out explanatory discs and pamphlets to girls they call known problem cases. On one late-night patrol, he spotted a Jewish girl entering a car with several Arab men. He intervened, but was unable to persuade her to leave, and the car sped off, hitting his leg. For nearly 30 minutes, he followed the car as it threaded its way through the serpentine hill roads that connect the closely packed Jewish settlements and Arab villages east of Jerusalem.
Using physical force with the girls won't work. Our goal is to talk to the girls and to convince them that their place is with the Jewish nation, not with our enemies. There are 4 girls that we have intervened with and saved since we started. Even if we rescued only 1 girl, we have done our part. We have done a good deed, and we thank God for it.
Tonight, he gives up his chase when Israeli police agree to let him file a complaint against the driver of the car that struck him. He hopes that drawing attention to the incident will embarrass the girl and force her to leave her boyfriend. He says it's one more girl he might save. For NPR News, I'm Shira Frankel in Pisgat Ze'ev.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Steve Inskeep. 4 years ago, the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs was at the center of a controversy over religious intolerance. Conservative evangelical Christians were accused of trying to force their religion on others. Since then, the military has issued guidelines for religious expression. One goal was to accommodate all faiths. So this morning, we will ask if the guidelines work. NPR's Jeff Brady visited a Buddhist chapel at the Air Force Academy.
This 300-square-foot space is the only Buddhist chapel on a U.S. military base. It was built 2 years back with a private foundation paying the $85,000 construction bill. On most Wednesday evenings, as the weekly service begins, about half the 18 pillows on the floor are occupied.
Tisarana. I take refuge in.
Green tea is served, incense is burning, and there are long periods of silent meditation before Sarah Bender, the sensei or leader, begins her talk.
The Tao also means the way it is, right? The way is also just the way it is. It's what's real. And the Buddha talked about what's real and how do we touch what's real.
18-year-old Tanner Faulkner is attending a prep school at the academy. This is his second visit to the Buddhist chapel. He says he feels encouraged to explore his religious curiosity.
They were so open about, especially during basic training, that, you know, they let us know, you know, hey, we have this available for you, and it is possible for you to go to different services, whether you're Jewish faith or Buddhist or Christian or just whatever. We have it available for you, and all you have to do is ask.
In 2006, a military panel found no evidence of religious discrimination at the academy, but said cadets and staff had more to learn about being sensitive to other people's beliefs. Dan Dwyer is a sophomore cadet, and he wasn't here back then, but he says now his fellow cadets seem to have respect for his religion.
People wonder where, like, I go every Wednesday. I tell them I go to the Buddhist, like, service, and it's just more of a, like, curiosity rather than judgment. It was like, how is that? And so I tell them.
More than 5,000 people in the military identify themselves as Buddhists. For these folks, questions inevitably arise about whether Buddhism, a pacifist religion, is really even compatible with military service. Sensei Sarah Bender says she has plenty of questions herself about whether it's ever right to kill in order to stop further harm. But Bender says she leaves the academy every Wednesday evening feeling like this is where she's supposed to be.
People in the military come up for real against questions that most of us just consider abstractly. The questions of Buddhism are the questions of life and death. So where else would you want Buddhism than right there where those questions are most vivid?
A watchdog group called the Military Religious Freedom Foundation says the academy has made progress since the controversy 4 years ago. The group says there are still occasional reports of religious intolerance. Sarah Bender says from her experience at the academy, it's now a place where cadets and staff are free to practice whatever religion they choose. Jeff Brady, NPR News, Denver.
In Israel, families of strongly conservative Jews, the ultra-Orthodox, as they're called, often grow very large. Yet this may be a record. A 99-year-old rabbi has an estimated 1,500 living descendants. His great-great-grandson just had a child, making six generations of a single family. NPR's Lourdes Garcia Navarro sends us this portrait.
In one corner, a young boy plays the electric piano. In another, four toddlers watch a cartoon. Spread around the modest apartment in the Orthodox town of Bnei Brak are at least 10 other family members. The head of this branch of the family is Rabbi Avraham Yeshaya Kanievsky. He's the grandson of the leader of the Lithuanian branch of Haredi, or ultra-Orthodox Judaism. He'll be 100 next year. Rabbi Avraham says he thinks his grandfather has at least 1,500 living descendants.
My grandfather had 11 children, and each of those had around 11 or 12 children, and the following generations did too. I don't know how many exactly there are. I don't know everybody, frankly.
He says there's no such thing as a small family gathering.
For a wedding, we basically, on average, would cater for 500 people, but usually it's thousands of people who show up.
Now in his mid-50s, Rabbi Avraham was married at 19. His wife was 18. They had nine children. His wife Hannah says having so many people of different ages in the family is wonderful.
My oldest child is 33, and my youngest is 11. I have 16 grandchildren. My youngest child was born after my first grandchild was born. My last daughter is younger than my eldest grandchild.
While the rabbi's extended family is remarkably large, it's far from unusual in the ultra-Orthodox community.
Man was created by God to procreate. The scriptures tell us we are here to be fruitful.
And it's not as much hassle as one would think, he says.
It's much easier having 10 children than having 2, because once you have 5 or 6 children, they can help each other and take care of each other. Shopping for bigger quantities costs less. It's nice to see how everyone helps each other out.
Tamar El-Or is an expert on the Orthodox community at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Speaking by phone, she says the Haredi have large families for a number of reasons, religious, social, and also historical.
After the Holocaust, of course, there was this sort of feeling that we have to fill up the gap and we have to fill the lines that are vacant.
She says the Israeli government also promotes large families.
The government pays per head, pays per every child. If you have more than 5 children, you have 6 children and up, you can more or less manage to live.
El-Or says now 52% of all elementary school children are either ultra-Orthodox or Arab Israelis, who also tend to have large families. Back at Rabbi Abraham's house, he says his community has a different way of seeing the world. He says here we are much more family-oriented. Lourdes Garcia-Navarro, NPR News, B'nai Brak.